He gestured back the way they had come. In the distance, they saw a small light bobbing in the darkness like a ship in the fog. "Someone else is here," he hissed. "A night guard, maybe?" Carlton whispered. "Why would an abandoned building need a guard?" Charlie wondered. "Kids probably come here to party," Carlton said, then grinned. "I would have come here to party too, if I'd known about it, or if I partied." "Okay, well, let's backtrack slowly," John said. "Jessica," he started, then made a zip-it motion across his lips. They continued down the hallway, this time with only the dimmer light of Carlton's keychain.
"Wait,"
Jessica stopped with a whisper, looking intently at the walls surrounding them.
"Something's not right."
"Yeah, no giant pretzels, I know."
Carlton seemed sincere. Jessica waved a hand at him impatiently.
"No, something isn't right about the architecture."
She took several steps back, trying to see the whole of it.
"Something is definitely not right," she repeated. "It's bigger on the outside."
"Bigger on the outside?" Charlie repeated, sounding puzzled.
"I mean, there's a big difference between where the inside wall is and where the outside wall is. Look."
Jessica ran along a length of wall between where two stores would have been.
"There would have been a store here and a store there."
John pointed to the obvious, not understanding the problem.
"But there's something in the middle,"
Jessica exclaimed, beating her hands against an empty portion of the wall.
"This part juts out into the parking lot like the stores on each side, but there's no way into it."
"You're right." Charlie started walking toward Jessica, studying the walls.
"There should be another entrance here."
"And," Jessica dropped her voice so that only Charlie could hear her,
"about the same size as Freddy's, don't you think?"
Charlie's eyes widened, and she took a quick step back from Jessica.
"What are you two whispering about?"
Carlton stepped closer.
"We're talking about you,"
Jessica said sharply, and they walked into one of the vacant department stores that seemed to sandwich the sealed space.
"Come on," she said. "Let's take a look."
They started combing the wall as a group, clustered around the tiny light. Charlie was not sure what to hope for. Aunt Jen had warned her about coming back. She didn't encourage Charlie to skip the memorial, not directly, but she wasn't pleased that Charlie was returning to Hurricane.
"Just be careful," Aunt Jen had said. "Some things, some memories, are best left undisturbed."
"Is that why you kept Dad's house?" Charlie thought now. "Is that why you kept paying for it? Leaving it untouched like some kind of shrine, but never visiting?"
"Hey!" John was gesturing wildly, running inside to catch up to the rest of them.
"Hide!"
The light was out in the hall again, bobbing up and down, and it was coming closer. Charlie glanced around. They were already too deep inside the massive store to get out in time, and there seemed to be nowhere to hide.
"Here! Here!"
Jessica whispered. There was a break in the wall beside a rig of scaffolding, and they hurried into it, squeezing past stacks of open boxes and sheets of plastic hanging from the ceiling. They made their way down what appeared to be a makeshift hallway just on the other side of the department store wall. It was really more like an alley. It was incongruous with the rest of the mall, not shiny and new, but dank and musty. One wall was made of the same concrete as the outside of the building, though it was rough and unfinished, and the other was exposed brick, some parts faded smooth with age, others with the mortar crumbling, leaving chinks and holes. Heavy wooden shelves of cleaning equipment stood against the wall, listing to the side, their boards sinking under the weight of old paint cans and mysterious buckets. Something was dripping from uncovered pipes overhead, leaving puddles that they all stepped carefully around. A mouse scuttled by, almost running over Carlton's foot. Carlton made a strangled sound, hand over his mouth.
They crouched down behind one of the wooden shelving units, pressing up against the wall. Charlie doused the light and waited. She took shallow breaths, perfectly still, watching and wishing she had picked a better position to freeze into. After a few minutes, her legs started to feel numb under her, and Carlton was so close that she could smell the light, pleasant scent of his shampoo.
"That's nice," she whispered.
"Thanks," Carlton said, knowing immediately what she was referring to.
"It comes in ocean breeze and tropical paradise. I prefer ocean breeze, but it dries the scalp."
"Hush," John hissed.
Charlie wasn't sure why she was so worried. It was just a night guard, and at the worst they would be asked to leave, maybe yelled at a little. She had an overblown aversion to getting in trouble. The bobbing light came closer. Charlie was acutely aware of her body, holding every muscle motionless. Suddenly, she could make out a thin figure leaning in from the great room outside. He shone his light in a long beam down the hallway, sweeping it up and down the walls.
"He's got us," Charlie thought.
But inexplicably, he turned and went, apparently satisfied. They waited another few minutes, but there was nothing. He was gone. They all moved slowly out of their crouched positions, stretching limbs that had gone to sleep. Carlton shook one foot vigorously until he could stand on it. Charlie looked down at Jessica, who was still hunched over, as if frozen in time.
"Jessica, are you okay?" she whispered.
Jessica looked up, smiling.
"You won't believe this."
She was pointing at the wall, and Charlie leaned over to see. There, etched in the worn brick, were clumsy letters, almost illegible in a child's handiwork. "Carlton smells like feet."
"You have to be kidding me," John whispered in awe, turning to face the wall and placing both hands against it. "I recognize these bricks."
He laughed.
"These are the same bricks."
His smile faded.
"They didn't tear it down. They built around it."
"It's still here."
Jessica unsuccessfully tried to keep her voice down.
"There has to be a way in," she added,
her eyes wide with an almost childish excitement. Charlie shone the flashlight up and down the hallway, playing the light off each wall, but there was no break, no door.
"There was a back door to Freddy's," John said. "Marla wrote that right next to the back door, right?"
"Why didn't they just knock it down?" Charlie pondered.
"Does this hallway just lead nowhere?"
Jessica said, puzzled.
"It's the story of my life," Carlton said lightly.
"Wait."
Charlie ran her fingers along the edge of a shelf, peering through the odds and ends crammed onto it. The wall behind it looked different. It was metal, not brick.
"Right here."
She stepped back and looked at the others. "Help me move it." John and Jessica pressed against one side in a unified effort, and she and Carlton pulled on the other. It was immensely heavy, laden with cleaning supplies and large buckets of nails and tools, but it slid farther down the hall almost easily, without incident. Charlie stepped back, breathing hard.
"John, give me the big light again."
He handed it over, and she turned it back on, aiming where the shelf had stood.
"This is it," she said.
It was metal and rusting, spattered with paint, a stark contrast to the walls around it. There was only a hole where the handle had been. Someone must have removed it so the shelf could lie flush against the door. Silently, Charlie handed the flashlight back to John, and he held it above her head so she could see. She slipped around the others and tried to squeeze her fingers into the hole where the doorknob once was, trying to pull it open to no avail.
"It's not going to open," she said.
John was behind her, peering over her shoulder.
"Just a second."
He squeezed himself into the space beside her and knelt carefully.
"I don't think it's locked or anything," he said. "I think it's just rusty. Look at it."
The door extended all the way to the floor, its bottom ragged and unfinished. The hinges were on the other side, and the edges were caked in rust. It looked as though it had not been opened in years. John and Charlie pulled on it together, and it moved a fraction of an inch.
"Yay!"
Jessica exclaimed, almost shouting, then covered her mouth.
"Sorry," she said in a whisper. "Containing my excitement."
They took turns pulling on it, leaning over one another, the metal scraping their fingers. The door held for a long moment, and then it came loose under their weight, swinging open slowly with an unearthly screech. Charlie looked nervously over her shoulder, but the guard did not appear. The door opened only about a foot wide, and they went one by one until all four were through. Inside, the air changed, and they all stopped short. Ahead of them was a dark hallway, familiar to them all.
"Is this?"
Jessica whispered, not taking her eyes from the dark expanse.
"It's here," Charlie thought.
She held out her hand for the flashlight, and John handed it to her wordlessly. She shone the light ahead of them, sweeping the walls. They were covered in children's drawings, crayon on yellowing, curling paper. She started forward, and the others followed, feet shuffling on old tile. It seemed to take forever to traverse the hall, or perhaps it was just that they were moving slowly, with methodical, deliberate steps. Eventually, the hallway opened up into a larger expanse, the dining room. It was just as they remembered it, completely preserved. The flashlight beam bounced off a thousand little things reflective, glittered, or topped with foil ribbon. The tables were still in place, covered in their silver and white checked cloths. The chairs were pulled up to them haphazardly, some tables with too many and others with too few. It looked as though the room had been abandoned in the middle of the lunch hour. Everyone had gotten up expecting to return, but never did. They walked in cautiously, breathing cold, stale air that had been trapped inside for a decade. The whole restaurant gave off a sense of abandonment. No one was coming back. There was a small merry-go-round barely visible in the distant corner, with four child-sized ponies still at rest from their last song. In an instant, Charlie froze in place, as did the others.
There they were.
Eyes stared back from the dark, large and lifeless. An illogical panic pulsed through her. Time held still. No one spoke. No one breathed, as though a predatory animal was stalking them. But as the moments passed, the fear waned, until she was back again, as a child, and with old friends, separated from one another for far too long. Charlie walked toward the eyes in a straight line. Behind her, the others were motionless. Hers were the only footsteps. As Charlie walked, she touched the cold back of an old party chair without looking at it, guiding it out of her path. She took one final step, and the eyes in the dark became clear. It was them. Charlie smiled.
"Hi,"
she whispered, too soft for the others to hear. Before her stood three animatronic animals, a bear, a rabbit, and a chicken, all standing as tall as adults, maybe taller. Their bodies were segmented like artists' models, each limb made of distinct, squarish pieces, separate at the joints. They belonged to the restaurant, or maybe the restaurant belonged to them, and there had been a time when everyone knew them by name. There was Bonnie, the rabbit. His fur was a bright blue, his squared-off muzzle held a permanent smile, and his wide and chipped pink eyes were thick-lidded, giving him a perpetually worn-out expression. His ears stuck up straight, crinkling over at the top, and his large feet splayed out for balance. He held a red bass guitar, blue paws poised to play, and around his neck was a bow tie that matched the instrument's fiery color.
Chica the chicken was more bulky and had an apprehensive look, thick black eyebrows arching over her purple eyes and her beak slightly open, revealing teeth, as she held out a cupcake on a platter. The cupcake itself was somewhat disturbing, with eyes set into its pink frosting and teeth hanging out over the cake, a single candle sticking out the top.
I always expected the cupcake to jump off the plate.
Carlton gave a half laugh and cautiously stepped up to Charlie's side.
They seem taller than I remember, he added in a whisper.
That's because you never got this close as a kid. Charlie smiled, at ease, and stepped closer.
You were busy hiding under tables,
Jessica said from behind them, still some distance away. Chica wore a bib around her neck with the words, Let's eat, set out in purple and yellow against a confetti-covered background. A tuft of feathers stuck up in the middle of her head. Standing between Bonnie and Chica was Freddy Fazbear himself, namesake of the restaurant. He was the most genial-looking of the three, seeming at ease where he was. A robust, if lean, brown bear, he smiled down at the audience, holding a microphone in one paw, sporting a black bow tie and top hat. The only incongruity in his features was the color of his eyes, a bright blue that surely no bear had ever had before him. His mouth hung open, and his eyes were partially closed, as though he had been frozen in song. Carlton drew closer to the stage until his knees pressed against the rim of it.
Hey, Freddy, he whispered. Long time no see.
He reached out and grabbed at the microphone, wiggling it to see if he could get it loose.
Don't!
Charlie blurted, looking up into Freddy's fixed gaze as though making sure he hadn't noticed. Carlton pulled his hand back like he had touched something hot.
Sorry. Come on, John said, cracking a smile. Don't you want to see the rest of the place?
They spread out across the room, peering into corners and carefully trying doors, acting as though everything might be breakable to the touch. John went over to the small carousel, and Carlton disappeared into the dark arcade off the main room.
I remember it being a lot brighter and noisier in here.
Carlton smiled as though at home again, running his hands over the aging knobs and flat plastic buttons.
I wonder if my high scores are still in there, he muttered to himself.
To the left of the stage was a small hallway. Half hoping no one would notice where she had gone, Charlie started down it silently as the others occupied themselves with their own curiosities. At the end of the short, plain corridor was her father's office. It had been Charlie's favorite place in the restaurant. She liked to play with her friends in the main area, but she loved the singular privilege of coming back here when her father was doing paperwork. She paused outside the closed door, her hand poised over the knob, remembering. Most of the room was filled with his desk, his filing cabinets, and small boxes of uninteresting parts. In one corner was a smaller filing cabinet, painted a salmon color that Charlie had always insisted was pink. That had been Charlie's. The bottom drawer held toys and crayons, and the top had what she liked to call my paperwork. It was mostly coloring books and drawings, but occasionally she would go over to her father's desk and try to copy down whatever he was writing in a childish, crayoned hand. Charlie tried the door, but it was locked.
Better this way, she thought.
The office was personal, and she did not really want it open tonight. She headed back into the main dining room and found John looking pensively at the merry-go-round. He eyed her with curiosity, but did not ask where she had gone.
I used to love this thing.
Charlie smiled, approaching warmly. Yet now the painted figures seemed odd and lifeless to her. John made a face, as though he knew what she was thinking.
Not the same, he said.
He rubbed his hand over the top of a polished pony, as though to scratch it behind the ear.
Just not the same, he repeated,
removing his hand and gazing elsewhere. Charlie glanced over to see where the others were. In the arcade, she could see Jessica and Carlton wandering among the games. The consoles stood still and unlit, like massive tombstones, their screens blank.
"I never liked playing the games," Jessica said, smiling. "They moved too fast, and just when I'd start to figure out what to do, I'd die and it would be someone else's turn."
She wiggled a joystick that squeaked from neglect.
"They were rigged anyway," Carlton said with a wink.
"When's the last time you played one of these?"
Jessica asked, peering closely into one of the screens to see what image was burned into it from too many years of use. Carlton was busy rocking a pinball machine back and forth, trying to get a ball to come loose.
There's a pizza place I visit sometimes."
He set the table back on four legs carefully and glanced at Jessica.
"But it's no Freddy's," he added.
John was roaming through the dining room again amid the tables, flicking the stars and spirals hanging overhead. He plucked a red party hat from the table, stretched the rubber band hanging loosely from its base, and snapped it around his head, red and white tassels hanging down over his face.
"Oh, let's check out the kitchen," he said.
Charlie followed as he bounded off toward it. Although the kitchen had been off-limits to her friends, she'd spent a lot of time there, so much so that the chefs chased her out by name, or at least by the name they heard her father call her, Charlotte. John overheard someone calling her Charlotte one day when they were in kindergarten, and persisted in teasing her with it constantly. He could always get a rise out of her with that. It wasn't that Charlie didn't like her full name, but Charlie was who she was to the world. Her father called her Charlotte, and it was like a secret between them, something no one else was allowed to share. The day she left Hurricane for good, the day they said goodbye, John had hesitated.
"Bye, Charlie," he said.
In their cards, letters, and phone calls, he had never called her Charlotte again. She never asked why, and he never told her. The kitchen was still fully stocked with pots and pans, but it held little interest for Charlie in the midst of her memories. She headed back out into the open space of the dining room, and John followed. At the same time, Jessica and Carlton stumbled out of the arcade, tripping into each other as they crossed the thresholds between rooms in the dark.
"Anything interesting?" John asked.
A gum wrapper, 30 cents, and Jessica. So no, not really," Carlton said.
Jessica playfully gave him a punch in the shoulder.
"Oh, have we all forgotten?"
Jessica gave an evil smile, pointing to another hallway on the opposite side of the dining room. She headed toward it swiftly before anyone could answer, and they followed her. The hallway was long and narrow, and the farther they went, the less the flashlight seemed to illuminate. At last the passage opened out into a small room for private parties, set up with its own tables and chairs. As they entered, there was a collective hush. There in front of them was a small stage, the curtain drawn. A sign was strung across the front. Out of order, it read, in neat, handwritten letters. They stood still for a minute. Then Jessica went up to it and poked the sign.
"Pirate's Cove," she said. 10 years later and it's still out of order." "Don't touch it," Charlie thought.
"I had one birthday back here," John said. "It was out of order then, too."
He took hold of the edge of the curtain and rubbed the glittered fabric between his fingers.
"No," Charlie wanted to say again, but stopped. "You're being silly," she chided herself. "Do you think he's still back there?" Jessica said playfully, threatening to make the reveal with one giant swing on the curtain.
"I'm sure he is."
John gave a false smile, seeming uncomfortable for the first time.
"Yes, he's still there," Charlie thought.
She stepped back cautiously, suddenly becoming aware of the drawings and posters surrounding them like spiders on the wall. Charlie's flashlight carefully inched from picture to picture, all depicting different variations of the same character,
a large and energetic pirate fox with a patch over one eye and a hook for a hand, usually swinging in to deliver a pizza to hungry children.
"This is the room where you were the one hiding under tables," Jessica said to Charlie, trying to laugh. "But you're a big girl now, right?"
Jessica climbed up on the stage unsteadily, almost losing her footing. John reached out a hand to steady her as she righted herself. She giggled nervously, looking down at the others as though for guidance, then grabbed hold of the tasseled edge of the fabric. She waved her other hand in front of her face as dust fell from the cloth.
"Maybe this isn't a good idea."
She laughed, but there was an edge to her voice, like she really meant it, and she looked down at the stage for a moment, as though poised to climb back down. Still, she didn't move, taking the edge of the curtain again.
"Wait," John said. "Can you hear that?"
They were all dead quiet, and in the silence Charlie could hear them all breathing. John's breaths were deliberate and calm, Jessica's quick and nervous. As she thought about it, her own breathing began to feel odd, like she had forgotten how to do it.
"I don't hear anything," she said.
"Me neither," Jessica echoed.
"What is it?"
"Music. It's coming from..."
He gestured back the way they had come.
"From the stage?"
Charlie cocked her head to the side.
"I don't hear it."
"It's like a music box," he said.
Charlie and Jessica listened carefully, but their blank expressions didn't change.
"It stopped, I guess."
John returned his gaze forward.
"Maybe it was an ice cream truck," Jessica whispered.
"Hey, that wouldn't be so bad right now."
John appreciated the levity. Jessica turned her attention back to the curtain, but John began to hum a tune to himself.
"It reminded me of something," he mumbled.
"Okay, here I go,"
Jessica announced. She did not move. Charlie found her eyes drawn to Jessica's hand on the curtain, her pink, manicured nails pale against the dark, glittery fabric. It was almost like the hushed moment in a theater crowd, when the lights went dark but the curtain had not yet risen. They were all still, all anticipating, but they were not watching a play, no longer playing a game. All the mirth had gone out of Jessica's face. Her cheekbones stood out stark in the shadows, and her eyes looked grim as though the simple thing she was about to do might be of terrible consequence. As Jessica hesitated, Charlie realized her hand hurt. She was making a fist so tight her nails dug into her flesh, but she could not force her grip to loosen. A crash sounded from back the way they came, a cascading, clanging noise ringing out and filling the whole space. John and Charlie froze, meeting each other's eyes in sudden panic. Jessica dropped the curtain and leaped off the stage, bumping into Charlie and knocking the light out of her hands.
"Where's the way out?"
she exclaimed, and John came over to help. They hurriedly searched the walls, and Charlie chased the light beam spiraling across the floor. Just as they were all back to their feet, Carlton came trotting in.
"I knocked over a bunch of pots in the kitchen," he exclaimed, an apology amid the panic.
"I thought you were with us," Charlie said.
"I wanted to see if there was any food left," Carlton said, not making it clear if he'd found anything or not.
"Seriously?" John laughed.
"That guard might have heard," Jessica said anxiously. "We have to get out of here."
They started for the door, and Jessica started running. The rest took off after her, picking up speed as they reached the hallway, until they were racing as though something were behind them.
"Run, run,"
John called out, and they all burst into giggles. The panic feigned, but the urgency real. They squeezed back through the door one by one and pushed it shut with the same painful squeal, Carlton and John leaning on it until it sealed. They all took hold of the shelf, hefting it back into place, and replacing the tools so that it appeared undisturbed.
"Look good?"
Jessica said, and John tugged her arm, guiding her away.
They made their way quickly but carefully back the way they came, using only Carlton's penlight, back through the empty hallways and the open atrium to the parking lot. The guard's light did not appear again.
"Little anticlimactic," Carlton said with disappointment, checking back one more time in hopes they were being chased.
"Are you kidding?" Charlie said as she went to her car, already pulling the keys free from her pocket. She felt as though something locked deep inside her had been disturbed, and she was not sure if that was a good thing or not.
"That was fun," John exclaimed, and Jessica laughed.
"That was terrifying," she cried.
"It can be both," Carlton said, grinning widely.
Charlie began to laugh, and John joined in.
"What?"
Jessica said. Charlie shook her head, still laughing a little.
"It's just, we're all exactly the same as we were. I mean, we're totally different and older and everything, but we're the same. You and Carlton sound exactly like you did when we were 6.
"Right," Jessica said, rolling her eyes again, but John nodded.
"I know what you mean," he said. "And so does Jessica. She just doesn't like to admit it."
He glanced back at the mall.
"Is everybody sure that guard didn't see us?"
"We can outrun him now,"
Carlton said reasonably, his hand resting on the car.
"I guess,"
John said, but he did not sound convinced.
"You haven't changed either, you know,"
Jessica said with a certain satisfaction.
"Stop looking for problems where there aren't any."
"Still," John said, glancing back again, "we should get out of here. I don't want to push our luck."
"See you all tomorrow, then?"
Jessica said as they parted ways. Carlton gave a little wave over his shoulder. Charlie's heart sank a little as Jessica settled herself into the passenger seat, tidily buckling herself in. She had not been looking forward to this. It wasn't that she didn't like Jessica, just that being alone with her was uncomfortable. She still wasn't much more than a stranger. Yet Charlie was still exhilarated from the night's adventure, and the lingering adrenaline gave her a new confidence. She smiled at Jessica. After tonight, they suddenly had something very much in common.
"Do you know which way the motel is?"
she asked, and Jessica nodded and reached for the purse down at her feet. It was small and black with a long strap, and on the drive to the construction site, Charlie had already seen her remove a lip gloss, a mirror, a pack of breath mints, a sewing kit, and a tiny hairbrush. Now she pulled out a small notebook and pen. Charlie smiled.
"Sorry, how much stuff do you have in that thing?" she asked, and Jessica looked at her with a grin. "The secrets of the purse must not be disclosed," she said playfully, and they both laughed.
Jessica started reading Charlie the directions, and Charlie obeyed, turning left and right without paying much attention to her surroundings. Jessica had already checked in, so they went straight to their room, a small beige box of a room with 2 double beds covered in shiny brown spreads. Charlie set her bags on the bed closest to the door, and Jessica went to the window.
"As you can see, I splurged on the room with the view," she said, and flung the curtains open dramatically to reveal 2 dumpsters and a dried-out hedge. "I want to have my wedding here."
"Right," Charlie said, amused. Jessica's prim demeanor and fashion model looks made it easy to forget that she was smart as well. As a child, she remembered being slightly intimidated every time they got together to play, before realizing after the first few minutes how much she liked Jessica. She wondered if it was hard for Jessica to make friends, looking the way she did, but it wasn't the kind of thing you could really ask someone. Jessica flopped down on the bed, lying across it to face Charlie.
"So, tell me about you," she said confidentially, mocking a talk show host or someone's nosy mother.
Charlie shrugged awkwardly, put on the spot.
"What does that mean?" she said.
Jessica laughed.
"I don't know. What an awful thing to ask, right? I mean, how do you answer that? How about school? Any cute boys?"
Charlie lay down across the bed, mimicking Jessica's position. Cute boys? What are we, 12?
Well?
Jessica said impatiently. I don't know, she said. Not really. Her class was too small. She had known most of the people in it since she moved in with Aunt Jen, and dating anyone, liking them like that, seemed forced and altogether unappealing. She told Jessica as much.
Most of the girls, if they want to date, they date older guys, she said. And you don't have an older guy?
Jessica teased. Nah, Charlie said. I figured I'd wait around for our batch to grow up.
Right.
Jessica burst out laughing before quickly thinking of something to share.
Last year there was this guy, Donnie, she said. I was gaga for him, like, really. He was so sweet to everyone. He wore all black all the time, and he had this black curly hair so thick, all I could think about when I sat behind him was burying my face in it. I was so distracted, I ended up with an A- in trig. He was super artistic, a poet, and he carried around one of those black leather notebooks, and he was always scribbling something in it, but he would never show anybody.
She sighed dreamily.
I figured if I could get him to show me his poetry, I would really come to know his soul, you know?
So did he ever? Charlie said.
Oh, yeah, she said, nodding emphatically. I asked him out, finally, you know, because he was shy, and he was never going to ask me. And we went to the movies and made out a little. And then we went and hung out on the roof of his apartment building, and I told him all about how I want to study ancient civilizations and go on archaeological digs and stuff. And he showed me his poems.
And did you come to know his soul? Charlie said, excited to be included in girl talk, something she felt like she'd never really gotten to participate in before. Charlie nodded eagerly, but not too eagerly. She calmed herself as Jessica scooted forward on the bed to whisper.
The poems were awful. I didn't know it was possible to be both melodramatic and boring at the same time. I mean, like, just reading them made me embarrassed for him.
She covered her face in her hands. Charlie laughed. What did you do?
What could I do? I told him it wasn't going to work out and went home.
Wait, right after you read his poetry?
I still had the notebook in my hand.
Oh no, Jessica, that's awful. You must have broken his heart.
I know, I felt so bad, but it was like the words just came out of my mouth. I couldn't stop myself.
Did he ever speak to you again?
Oh, yeah, he's perfectly nice. But now he takes statistics and economics and wears sweater vests.
You broke him. Charlie threw a pillow at Jessica, who sat up and caught it.
I know. He'll probably be a millionaire stockbroker instead of a starving artist, and it's all my fault.
She grinned.
Come on, he'll thank me someday.
Charlie shook her head. Do you really want to be an archaeologist?
Yeah,
Jessica said.
Huh,
said Charlie.
Sorry, I thought...
She shook her head.
Sorry, that is really cool. You thought I'd want to do something in fashion, Jessica said.
Well, yeah.
It's okay, Jessica said. I did too. I mean, I do. I love fashion. But there's only so much to it, you know? I think it's amazing to think about how people lived 1,000 years ago, or 2,000, or 10. They were just like us, but so different. I like to imagine living in other times, other places. Wonder who I would have been. Anyway, what about you?
Charlie rolled over onto her back, looking up at the ceiling. The tiles were made of loose, stained styrofoam, and the one above her head was askew. I hope there aren't any bugs up in there, she thought. I don't know, she said slowly. I think it's really cool that you know who you want to be, but I have just never had that kind of a plan.
Well, it's not like you have to figure it out now, Jessica said.
Maybe, Charlie said. But I don't know. You know what you want to do. John's known since he could hold a pencil that he wanted to be a writer, and he's already getting published. Even Carlton. I don't know what he has planned, but you can just see that there's a scheme brewing behind all his kidding around. But I just don't have that kind of direction.
It really doesn't matter, Jessica said. I don't think most people know at our age. Plus, I might change my mind, or not get into college or something. You never know what's going to happen. Hey, I'm going to get changed. I want to get some sleep.
She went into the bathroom, and Charlie stayed where she was, gazing at the sorry-looking ceiling. She supposed it was becoming a defect, her earnest refusal to consider the past or future. Live in the present moment, her Aunt Jen said often, and Charlie had taken it to heart. Don't dwell on the past. Don't worry about things that may never happen. In eighth grade, she had taken a shop class, vaguely hoping the mechanical work might spark something of her father's talent, might unleash some inherited passion lying latent within her. But it had not. She had made a clumsy-looking birdhouse for the backyard. She never took another shop class, and the birdhouse only attracted one squirrel who promptly knocked it down. Jessica came out of the bathroom wearing pink striped pajamas, and Charlie went in to get ready for bed, changing and brushing her teeth hurriedly. When she came out again, Jessica was already under the covers with the light by her bed turned off. Charlie turned hers off too, but the light from the parking lot still shone in from the window, somehow filtering past the dumpsters. Charlie stared up at the ceiling again, her hands behind her head.
Do you know what's going to happen tomorrow? She asked. I don't really know, Jessica said. I know it's a ceremony at the school.
Yeah, I know that, Charlie said. Are we going to have to do anything? Like, do they want us to speak?
I don't think so, Jessica said. Why? Do you want to say something?
No, I was just wondering.
Do you ever think about him? Jessica asked.
Sometimes. I try not to, Charlie said half-truthfully. She had sealed off the subject of Michael in her mind, locked him tight behind a mental wall she never touched. It wasn't an effort to avoid the subject. In fact, it was an effort to think of him now.
What about you? She asked Jessica. Not really, she said. It's weird, right? Something happens, and it's the worst thing you can ever imagine, and it's just burned into you at the time, like it's going to go on forever. And then the years go by, and it's just another thing that happened. Not like it's not important or terrible, but it's in the past, just as much as everything else, you know?
I guess, Charlie said. But she did know. I just try not to think about those things.
Me too. You know, I just went to a funeral last week.
I'm sorry, Charlie said, sitting up.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine, Jessica said. I barely even knew him. He was just an old relative who lived three states away. I think I met him once, but I hardly remember it. We mostly went for my mom's sake. But it was at an old-fashioned funeral parlor, like in the movies, with an open coffin. And we all walked by the coffin, and when it was my turn, I looked at him, and he could have been sleeping, you know? Just calm and restful, like people always say dead people look. There was nothing that I could have pointed out that made me think, dead. If you asked me, every feature of his face looked the same as if he were alive. His skin was the same, his hair was the same as if he were alive. But he wasn't alive, and I just knew it. I would have known it immediately, even if he wasn't, you know, in a coffin.
I know what you mean. There is something about them when they're, Charlie said softly. It sounds stupid when I say it, but when I looked at him, he looked so alive, and yet I knew, just knew that he wasn't. It made my skin crawl.
That's the worst thing, isn't it? Charlie said. Things that act alive but aren't.
What?
Jessica said. I mean things that look alive but aren't, Charlie said quickly.
We should get some sleep, she said. Did you set the alarm?
Yes, Jessica said.
Good night.
Night. Charlie knew sleep was still a long way off. She knew what Jessica meant, probably better than Jessica did. The artificial shine in eyes that followed you as you moved, just like a real person's would. The slight lurch of realistic animals who did not move the way a living thing should. The occasional programming glitch that made a robot appear to have done something new, creative. Her childhood had been filled with them. She had grown up in the strange gap between life and not life. It had been her world. It had been her father's world. Charlie closed her eyes. What did that world do to him? Chapter 3. Thud, thud, thud. Charlie startled out of sleep, disoriented. Something was banging on her door, trying to force its way in.
Oh, for goodness sake, Jessica said grumpily, and Charlie blinked and sat up.
Right. The motel. Hurricane. Someone was knocking on the door. As Jessica went to answer it, Charlie got out of bed and looked at the clock. It was 10 a.m. She looked out the window at the bright new day. She had slept worse than usual. Not nightmares, but dark dreams she could not quite remember, things that stuck with her just beyond the back of her mind, images she could not catch.
Charlie!
Someone was screeching. Charlie went to the door and found herself immediately enveloped in a hug, Marla's plump arms gripping her like a vice. Charlie hugged her back, tighter than she meant to. When Marla let go, she stepped back, grinning. Marla's moods had always been so intense they were contagious, spreading out to whoever was in her path. When she was gloomy, a pall fell over all her friends, the sun gone behind her cloud. When she was happy, like now, it was impossible to avoid the lift of her joy. She was always breathless, always slightly scattered, always giving the impression that she was running late, though she almost never was. Marla was wearing a loose, dark red blouse, and it suited her well, setting off her fair skin and dark brown hair. Charlie had kept in better touch with Marla than the others. Marla was the type who made it easy to stay friends, even at a distance. Even as a little kid, she was always sending letters and postcards, undeterred if Charlie didn't respond to every one. She was resolutely positive and assumed that everyone liked her, unless they made it clear otherwise, using the proper expletives. Charlie admired it about her. She herself, though not shy, was always calculating. Does that person like me? Are they just being polite? How do people tell the difference? Marla had come to visit her once when they were 12. She had charmed Charlie's aunt and made fast friends with her school friends, while still making it abundantly clear that she was Charlie's friend, and she was there only to see Charlie. Marla's gigantic smile turned serious as she studied Charlie, peering at her as if trying to spot the differences since they last met.
You're as pale as ever.
She took Charlie's hands in her own.
And you're all clammy. Don't you ever get warm?
She dropped Charlie's hands and proceeded to study the motel room skeptically, as though uncertain exactly what it was.
It's the luxury suite,
Jessica said without expression as she searched for something in her bag. Her hair was sticking up in all directions, and Charlie stifled a smile. It was nice to see something about Jessica in disarray for once. Jessica found her hairbrush and held it up triumphantly.
Ha! Take that, morning frizz.
Come on in, Charlie said, realizing she and Marla were still in the doorway, the door wide open. Marla nodded.
One sec. Jason!
She shouted out the door. No one emerged.
Jason!
A young boy came trotting up from the road. He was short and wiry, darker skinned than his half-sister. His Batman t-shirt and black shorts were made for someone twice his size. His hair was cut close to his head, and his arms and legs were streaked with dirt.
"Were you playing in the road?" Marla demanded.
"No," he said.
"Yes, you were. Don't do that. If you get yourself killed, Mom's gonna blame me. Get inside."
Marla shoved her little brother inside and shook her head.
"How old are you now?" Charlie asked.
11,
Jason said. He went to the TV and started fiddling with buttons.
"Jason, stop it," Marla said. "Play with your action figures."
"I'm not a little kid," he said. "Anyway, they're in the car."
But he stepped away from the television and went to look out the window. Marla rubbed her eyes.
"We just got here. We had to leave at 6 this morning, and someone," she said pointedly, glancing over her shoulder at Jason, "wouldn't stop fiddling with the radio. I am so tired."
She didn't seem tired, but then she never did. At their sleepovers as kids, Charlie remembered her bouncing around like a maniac while the rest of them were winding down for the night, then falling asleep abruptly, like a cartoon character who'd been hit over the head with a rolling pin.
"We should get ready," Jessica said. "We're supposed to meet the guys at the diner in an hour."
"Hurry," Marla said. "We have to change, too. I didn't want to get all gross while we were driving."
"Jason, you can watch TV," Charlie said, and he looked at Marla.
She nodded, and he grinned and turned it on, starting to flip through channels.
"Please just pick a channel," Marla said.
Charlie headed into the bathroom to get dressed, while Jessica fussed with her hair. A little less than an hour later, they pulled into the diner parking lot. The others were already there, in the same booth they'd been in the night before. When they got inside, Marla performed a second round of squeals and hugs, only slightly quieter now that they were in public. Overshadowed by her enthusiasm, Lamar stood and waved at Jessica and Charlie, waiting until Marla sat down.
"Hi, guys," he said at last.
He was wearing a dark tie and a dark gray suit. He was tall and thin, black, with his hair shaved close to his head. His features were sharp and attractive, and he looked just a little older than the rest of them. It could have been the suit, but Charlie thought it was something about the way he stood, holding himself like he would be comfortable wherever he was. They had all dressed up a little for the ceremony. Marla had changed at the motel, and she and Jessica were both wearing dresses. Jessica's was knee-length and covered in pastel flowers, a light fabric that moved as she walked. Marla's was simple, white with big sunflowers splashed over it. Charlie hadn't thought to bring a dress, and she hoped she didn't look out of place in black pants and a white button-down shirt. John was wearing a light purple shirt today, though he'd added a matching tie in a slightly darker color, and Carlton seemed to be wearing an identical outfit as before, still all in black. They all sat down.
"Well, don't we all look nice?" Marla said happily. "Where's Jason?"
Jessica craned her head from side to side. Marla groaned.
"I'll be right back."
She scooted out of the booth and hurried out the door.
"Lamar, what have you been up to?"
Charlie asked. Lamar grinned.
"He's an Ivy League man," Carlton said, teasing.
Lamar looked briefly down at the table, but he was smiling.
"Early acceptance," was all he said.
"Which one?"
Jessica said.
"Cornell."
"Wait, how did you already apply to college?" Charlie said. "That's not till next year. I don't even know where I want to go."
"He skipped sixth grade," John said.
There was a brief flicker of something across his face, and Charlie knew what it was. John liked being the clever one, the precocious one. Lamar had been kind of a goof-off when they were kids, and now he had leaped ahead. John forced a grin, and the moment passed.
Congratulations, he said, with no hint that it was not entirely sincere.
Marla came bursting in again, this time towing Jason behind her, holding on to his upper arm. At the hotel, she had made him change into a blazer and khakis as well, though he was still wearing his Nikes.
I'm coming! Stop it! He whined. Is that Jason? Carlton asked.
Yeah,
Jason said.
Do you remember me?
Carlton said.
I don't remember any of you,
Jason said unapologetically.
Sit there,
Marla said, pointing to the next booth over.
Okay,
he grumbled.
Marla, he can sit with us, Jessica said. Jason, come on over.
I want to sit here,
he said and sat down behind them. He pulled a video game out of his pocket and was oblivious to the world. The waitress came over and they ordered. Marla told her to put Jason's breakfast on their check. When their food came, Charlie checked her watch.
We don't have a lot of time, she said.
We'll get there, Carlton said. It's not far.
A small piece of food fell out of his mouth as he gestured down the road.
Have you been back to the school?
Lamar asked, and Carlton shrugged.
I pass it sometimes. I know this is a nostalgia trip for all of you, but I just live here. I don't exactly go around reminiscing about kindergarten all the time.
They were all quiet for a second, the beeps and pings of Jason's video game filling the silence.
Hey, did you know Lamar's going to Cornell next year? Jessica said to Marla.
Really? Well, aren't you ahead of the pack? She said. Lamar looked down at his plate. When he looked up, he was a little flushed.
All part of the 5-year plan, he said.
They laughed, and his blush deepened.
It's kind of weird to be back here, he said, hastily changing the subject. I think it's strange that I'm the only one who still lives here, Carlton said. Nobody ever leaves Hurricane.
Is it strange, though? Jessica said thoughtfully. My parents... You remember, my mom's from New York originally. She used to joke about going back. When I go back to New York. But it might as well have been when I win the lottery. She didn't mean it. And then right after Michael's... Right after, she stopped joking about it. Then 3 months later, we were all on a plane to visit her sister in Queens, and we never came back. My dad's father died when I was 9, and they came back to Hurricane for the funeral without me. They didn't want me coming back here, and honestly, I didn't want to go. I was kind of anxious the whole time they were gone. I kept looking out the window, hoping they would come back early, like something bad was going to happen to them if they stayed.
They looked at one another, considering. Charlie knew they had all moved, all but Carlton, but she had never thought about it. People moved all the time. Carlton was right, though. People didn't leave Hurricane.
We moved because my dad got a new job, the summer after 3rd grade, John said. That's not exactly mysterious. Lamar, you left in the middle of the semester that year.
Yeah, he said. But that's because when my parents split, I went with my mom to Indianapolis.
He frowned.
But my dad moved too. He's in Chicago now.
My parents left because of Michael, Marla said.
They all turned to her.
Afterward, my mom couldn't sleep. She said spirits were stirring in the town. Unquiet. My dad told her she was being ridiculous, but we still left as fast as we could.
Marla looked around at her friends.
What? She said defensively. I don't believe in ghosts.
I do, Charlie said.
She felt like she was talking from a great distance. She was almost surprised they could hear her.
I mean, not ghosts, but memories. I think they linger, whether there's someone there or not.
The house, her old house, was imbued with memory, with loss, with longing. It hung in the air like humidity. The walls were saturated, like the wood had soaked in it. It had been there before she came, And it was there now. It would be there forever. It had to be. There was too much, too great and vast a weight.